everybody in podcast land and also on YouTube. We're joining you with the most jank setup possible. Basically, David's in quarantine, so he's not here. So Linus watched the movie instead of him. The movie being Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Ba-ba-da-da.
But then Linus...
Actually, it's called Raiders of the Lost Ark. That Indiana Jones crap was added later.
That's retroactive. Interesting.
What are you talking about?
Hold on a second. What you guys are hearing is Linus broadcasting from his home because he's also quarantining himself now. And then here at the office, we've got Riley and James with a barrier.
Even if I wanted to spit at you, I couldn't.
The world is crumbling. But Carpool Critics, soldiers on.
Indeed.
You can't stop the podcast.
You can't stop people discussing movies that are old and not really relevant anymore.
Part of the reason...
because they got nothing better to do than watch movies.
Oh, that's true. That's true. That's a good point.
Part of the reason we're doing this movie is because it was revealed that I had never seen it before. And this actually was revealed on an LTT video of some months or years back. And you, Linus, really yelled at me. Because you were making Indiana Jones reference, and I knew that it was an Indiana Jones reference, but I didn't even know what movie it was from. I couldn't complete the line. And then I said, Raiders of the Lost Ark, that's the first one, right? And you said, what do you mean it's the first one?
Yeah, something along those lines, yes.
Wait, so is this kind of like the reverse of Star Wars? Like, the Indiana Jones wasn't in the title before, it was just Raiders of the Lost Ark?
Yeah, that's right.
Because Star Wars was Star Wars, and then they changed it to A New Hope, like Star Wars A New Hope. It's the reverse, so that's funny.
It's really interesting because when I was watching this movie, they say the character's name, Indiana Jones. Hey, Indiana Jones. So many times, I was like, what the hell? I feel like someone drew this dude with a wide-brimmed hat and a whip, and they said, his name is Indiana Jones.
Oh, that's exactly what
And
happened.
They just made the whole series after that.
Oh, totally. But, I mean, there is a very interesting story about how the character came about.
I want to hear that in a minute.
Okay.
Can you tell me in a minute?
I will.
First, Linus, I gather you watched this a lot as a kid. You're very familiar with the whole trilogy. Is that true?
I wouldn't say I watched it a lot as a kid, but I've definitely seen every movie more than 5 times.
Biggest fan in the world?
No, definitely not.
Okay,
but I do love the movies.
Okay, so give me your rating of this movie out of 10.
I give it an 8, 8.5.
You didn't think about it until now.
No, I didn't.
Do you have a slogan?
Okay. Perfect pacing and a brilliant mix of the real world and the magical makes Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark just the ultimate action film.
Okay.
The ultimate action film.
I think the pacing is perfect.
Wow. It is.
And yeah.
Well, okay. Oh, we'll get to that, though, because I actually have some comments on the pacing. Riley, you go.
I haven't seen this movie for a long time. I saw it as a kid. And so rewatching it in 2020 was an interesting experience, to say the least.
Did you watch it a number of times as a kid?
I've seen this movie a few times. I don't remember exactly how many, but I saw it a number of times as a kid.
Does it exist in your heart in a special place?
Not like a special place, but it's more like I'm aware of its special place in pop culture history.
Well, I mean, who isn't?
I give it a 7 out of 10 because that's like a mix of the historical contextual rating that I would give it and the modern day kind of, you know, in its place among the other films that we would rate.
That is the biggest question, philosophical question of rating this movie.
We'll get into that, but my slogan is, this movie belongs in a museum. You know that's a reference.
I get that now.
Hey, nice. It wasn't in this movie.
Linus is going to absolutely hate me.
It's in the other Indiana Jones movie.
Oh, well, they mention museums and stuff.
Yeah, but he doesn't say, it belongs in a museum. I think that's Temple of Doom. Maybe not. It might be The Last Crusade. Who knows?
Let me talk about me.
Okay.
I'm giving it a 6.5. Watching Linus's face.
I wish I could say I'm offended.
I think
Linus is. Look at him. He's hiding the pain.
We can't all have good taste. That's all.
Oh!
Hey, I think I have a pretty defensible position. We'll get into it right after this message from our sponsor, Private Internet Access. It's a VPN, guys, and it helps you hide your true IP address so that you can bypass geo-restrictions and censorship. You can connect up to 5 devices at once, and it includes an internet kill switch if your VPN gets disconnected involuntarily. PIA is available for Windows, Mac, Android, iOS, and even as a dang Chrome extension, so check it out at lmg.gg/carpoolpia.
Okay. I will.
Okay, here's the thing about this movie, guys. There's lots of sick moments. There's lots of great stuff in this movie. Like when he knocks somebody out and then the guy's hat like flies up and he catches it and puts his hat on. It's like, this movie is like an epic swashbuckler. It's a great
adventure. Like, yeah, it's like the prototypical swashbuckler, which is kind of funny because it itself was based on, I'm using terminology I got from the Wikipedia article, the serials of the 1930s.
It must be. I was watching it thinking, wow, everything references this. But then I thought, this probably references everything else.
Right, right.
Hey, wait a second. But if you haven't watched it or haven't seen it in a long time, shouldn't you give us the synopsis?
Yeah, I probably should. Okay, so the year is 1936. Archaeology professor Indiana Jones steals a gold idol from a booby-trapped South American temple, but it's stolen by his old enemy, René Bloch. Back in the U.S., two federal agents tell Indy of a Nazi excavation site in Egypt, which could be the resting place of the ancient Hebrew Ark of the Covenant. Indy must recruit his ex, Marion Ravenwood, who's also the daughter of his old professor, and Sala, an old friend in Cairo, to infiltrate the Nazi site and bring the Ark back to the States. Along the way, Indy gets involved in a series of fights, chases, and traps before the Nazis learn the full power of the Ark.
Such a colonial movie, hey? the opening shot, it's like you see these like weather-worn leather shoulders and his hat, and he's like, whoa, this guy is hardcore. He's walking in the jungle to get what he wants. But then it zooms out, and it's like, oh, and there's all the indigenous people carrying his crap for him.
Yeah. Honestly, that was the exact first thought I had as well. Like, it shows how
that's
much...
That's because we're woke, Riley.
I know. Look, I don't want to say we're the wokest, but it shows how far...
What a woke thing for you to say.
It shows how far things have kind of come that our first thought seeing the opening moments of this movie is to be like,
Well, that's problematic.
Yeah, this is problematic. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, can I jump in? Can I jump in right here and say
screw you guys.
The exact opposite experience?
Oh, boy.
Because my problem with your modern action heroes is that they are too independent. They're too self-sufficient. They speak 100 languages. Mm. They are martial arts experts. They are expert marksmen. They are survivalists. They can build a teepee out of, you know, two leaves and a stick. Whereas Indiana Jones, you know what? No, he's like a professor. So yeah.
What are you talking about? He's all of that. He's the same thing.
He needs help. He needs help at every stage in this entire process. He's just a dude. He's a badass dude, but he's just a dude.
Will you admit that he's a leading expert professor? He's also very athletic. He's a good fighter. He's good with a whip somehow. Like, he's kind of good at
a
lot of things.
Great fighter. I don't think he's a great fighter. I think he gets lucky a lot.
He's an okay fighter.
I think that's
part
of what makes it such an exciting swashbuckling adventure is he's actually genuinely vulnerable at so many stages in the film.
It's true. I don't think you could really make the argument that he's a, you know, Mary Sue or Gary Sue or whatever. He definitely needs help from people.
He's not Jason Bourne.
Yeah.
You know?
He needs help.
He's not unstoppable.
Yeah.
All it takes is, you know, one of these guides who he clearly is completely dependent on to stab him in the back, and he's like boned, and now he's got to do some quick thinking to get out of the situation. It's so much more exciting.
That reminds me, I forgot to say my slogan, which it's fitting here. Raiders of the Lost Ark, it's Han Solo, except they stay on Tatooine.
Well,
he is Han Solo. This movie came out after the second Star Wars movie.
No, he's 100% Han Solo. This is the exact same character.
They're totally cashing on that.
It's just, I take issue with the second part of your slogan.
That it's on Tatooine?
I don't think they stay on Tatooine. They go to all sorts of
crazy
places. They go
around. It's mostly desert.
Yeah, I guess so. Nepal isn't a desert.
Well, just because there's no sand doesn't mean it's
not
a desert.
I'm going to be pedantic about this.
Well, I'm going to also because, you know, the classification of a desert is about precipitation, not temperature. And I think parts of Nepal are pretty arid.
It was snowing.
Well, maybe snowing. This is stupid.
Yeah, pretty much.
We'll move on. I want to go back real quick to the woke.
You know what? Fine. Okay. He's Han Solo. Who cares? Is that a problem? He's an absolutely unforgettable character, and for whatever reason, just changing his outfit manages to make him a completely different brand that people remember differently.
The outfit isn't even that different. Like, you could envision Han Solo.
It's a hat. Yeah. It's Han Solo with a hat on.
He's got a jacket. Yeah, it's like a...
No, I'm not mad at that. I think the characterization in this movie is great, actually. There's so many great, like, one-liners and great responses. But it also does feel like a little bit of a let's do Star Wars again thing, particularly with even the music. Like, they had John Williams do it again. Did you notice that the motif, the theme that they use... because John Williams uses leitmotif, which is like for these different characters or relationships or set pieces in the movie, they'll have their own theme and you'll hear those themes repeated. And maybe that musical phrase is kind of adapted for the feeling. So in Star Wars, sometimes you, rather you be the soundboard here. Sometimes you hear the Imperial or you hear a sound and it's really uplifting and they're going to make it.
I'm mixing Indiana Jones and Star Wars in my head though.
Whatever. Sometimes you'll take that same musical theme and it'll be kind of depressing. They'll play it slower and you're like, oh, but it doesn't matter that is Luke's theme. You can play it many different ways, but it's Luke's theme.
Right.
In this movie, there's a theme between Indiana Jones and Ravenwood or
Marion.
Yeah.
Marion Ravenwood.
They have a romantic theme and it sounds a lot like the Han and Leia theme.
Mm.
Did you get that?
Well, it's, you know, there's only so many notes you can play. To be fair to John Williams.
What? What? John Williams has played a lot of notes, man.
Whoa.
Like, the theme to Home Alone is way different to the theme to Star Wars.
He's
Macaulay Culkin at home with that playing. Just bring it on, wet bandits.
Yeah, I love the music.
I didn't get that vibe at all. There were a couple moments where I went, oh, yeah, this is definitely John Williams, but not during the, I was about to say Han and Marion theme, not during the Indian Marion theme for sure.
Ah, look for it next time.
You know, I think that Harrison Ford is Han Solo in this movie. Indiana Jones and Han Solo are the same character, but I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. Because there's two sides of me that are pulling at each other with this, right? One side of me just wants to enjoy this movie as like a fun swashbuckling, you know, adventure. Don't think about it too much. It's like whatever. And the other side of me wants to like analyze this from a historical perspective and be like,
no, okay.
What parts of this are problematic? Because we never really...
You give in. You watch it as a swashbuckling adventure. Even when it was released, that's all it was. It's an action flick. You have to watch it for what it is. You got James here saying, well, go look for it. Go look for the similarities in the, you know, tonality of these two character themes. But, like, yes, you can watch movies like that, but you wouldn't watch a new action flick like that either.
Well...
You would watch it as an adventure film. That's what it is.
I would.
Well, okay.
Maybe that's my problem.
But by that same token, it's from the 80s, and I can sit down like I did and be like, sweet, I'm going to take this movie in, but, okay, it's from the 80s, and these fights are kind of lame. And so, like, are you asking me to take it, like, as it is, or am I supposed to adapt and watch it as if I'm somebody else? Like, watch it as if you're a time traveler. Watch it as if you're in the 80s and forgive some of the stuff that isn't so cool today.
I mean, yeah, you can say the fight scenes are lame, but I also think that they're, okay, I'm not going to say believable because they're not.
No, like, especially the part with the propeller, right? Where it's like the propeller's coming at him and he doesn't even push him in. They don't even give him like a Han shots first. He dives away and covers his eyes because they couldn't have the hero push him into this propeller. Such a gruesome act.
Yeah, it's totally comic booky, but you have to see it for what it is. Yes, it's not going to have the sick choreography where you've got, you know, 8 different stunt actors that are able to do all the different moves that our hero supposedly does in the film, but I don't know. I like that about it. I think it adds a lot.
It has good stunts though. Like, there's lots of like grabbing onto semi trucks as they're ripping down these gravel roads, and like that's great, good stuff. That is
a fantastic chase scene.
It's
one
great.
Of my favorites all time.
Here's how I balance the kind of like shut your brain off, enjoy the adventure side and the analytical side is by kind of like thinking about those moments where it might be culturally problematic, right? Like, I'm not gonna break it down and be like, oh, this doesn't make entirely perfect sense. But I think I will break it down in terms of like, okay, if this is supposed to be a dumb shut your brain off action movie, are the things that are then being, you know, injected into our willing subconscious or our unwilling subconscious, are they okay or not okay? And I feel like that, like, because, you know, I think that adventure, fun entertainment has a responsibility to be, you know, morally consistent or morally respectable. And I feel like that colonial element in the beginning, that's why that kind of rubs me the wrong way. Not because I'm like, oh, yeah, right, like, Indiana Jones should do it himself, or these guys would help him.
Well, it's not just the beginning.
It's not like a world building.
The whole story about this thing exists and we need to put it into our museum. We need to go bring it back for us. It's like,
yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, they're racing against the bad guys who are going to get it and use it for nefarious power purposes. So they want to get it first. So that it makes sense.
The bad guys who are also using the natives, the locals, to accomplish their goals.
They could have those elements in a movie, but I think back then they just weren't self-aware enough.
Right.
You have to be self-aware.
Can I just ask a question? What exactly is it that's wrong with hiring a local guide to do something? It's not like you're going to scale Mount Everest without a guide.
It's not that it's wrong. It's that he's using them to go and take one of their national artifacts, And
Linus might be referring just to the opening scene where he's just...
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
He hired other people to carry stuff and he's not carrying stuff.
Yeah, but then they screw him over. It's not like he won.
I know, but then that portrays the locals as scheming, sketchy people.
We also have no idea where those guys are actually from. Are you assuming their geographical location of residence?
I can't assume it because it only says they're in South America. It doesn't even say what country. South America, right, somewhere in the jungle, in the wilds, where there's no civilization.
I think you're really getting hung up on that.
No, I'm not getting hung up. I just think
great action scenes, colorful side characters.
No, hey. I'm not trying to take away any of that stuff. I think I'm just trying to say, this is why maybe, I tend to want to analyze this kind of stuff instead of just turning my brain off. Because wait a second.
It stands out because it shows us age.
Exactly. And that's why. It stands out because it's 2020 and we're not used to seeing
that. The fight scenes, the fight scenes aren't even consistently awesome. There are great chases, maybe the greatest chase of all time in your books. But then there's also scenes where it's Buddy swings a punch and then just kind of waits there to get the counterpunch. Swing, come on and hit me, boom. And that's not part of the character. That's just not great fight choreography.
Yeah. Part of that is also just the age, though. I tend to forgive that kind of thing. And I forgive all of this.
Well, I mean, I forgive it all. I think it's a great movie. I just think if it came out today as is, it would be it would be a student film in that respect. In other respects, the screenplay, Linus said, it's a tight screenplay.
Oh, yeah.
It's really good. They're all over the world. The pacing, the formula is well done.
I think I'm totally on board with you there, Linus. The pacing, the overall kind of feel of the adventure is great.
Okay, I have one thing with that though. I felt by the time they're on that boat at the end, I was like, isn't this over already? It kind of dragged on for me.
Really?
Yeah.
You mean when it's the horror man, the part where she's where does it not hurt? And he's here and here.
I'm just point at your crotch already, buddy. Come on.
But then he says here, he points at his lips and they kiss and then he falls asleep immediately.
What's up with that? I think they just had to do that because it's a PG movie.
Maybe. That was just so confusing. I was like, wait, why did he just wanted a kiss and that's
it? Blue-balled her.
Yeah.
I thought that was a great way to handle making it a PG movie.
Right.
In fact, I really like the way that the movie approaches the comedic relief moments. The comedy is one of the things I like so much compared to modern action flicks, whether it's the music. So that chase scene where they're running around in the market, it's really serious and life-threatening and there's, bad guys running around everywhere. But the music is so lighthearted and funny. They might as well have been playing Yakety Sax. It was meant to be lighthearted.
Yeah.
And then during a really, really intense moment, when that Nazi torturer scary guy comes into the tent and whips out these three bars and then with totally intense music, he folds it into a coat hanger, puts his coat on it and hands it to a subordinate and says, okay, now we need to talk or whatever his,
that was
whatever
so
his
silly.
Cheesy line is, but they don't acknowledge it at all.
No.
I thought that was so great. No change in the music tone. Everyone is still tense, still upset, even though it's what just happened?
Okay, we'll see.
I didn't know if this was a joke or not. Maybe you can tell me. When they first meet Salah, one of the things he says was, they have not one brain among them, except one.
What?
They have not one brain among them, except one. Is that a joke or bad writing?
Wasn't listening that closely.
I think he's saying, they have not one brain among them, but one of them has a brain.
Yeah, I know what he's saying, but it's like you just said.
But he's not including that one guy in the rest of the phrase.
Okay, so it's not a joke. It's just.
It makes perfect sense, James.
I don't like it. I think it's bad.
It's pretty simple.
It reminds me of that joke from Kung Pao. You guys ever see Kung Pao Enter the Fist? There's a part where it's like, you ever seen you ever seen him before? No, never. Well, twice.
That movie is fantastic.
Wait, I should do that again because actually it's a girl and guy the other way. It's like, oh. Yeah, that part in Kung Pao where it's like, you ever seen him before? No, never. Well, twice. Like, what is that?
See, that movie is a great one to shut your brain off because you don't expect that movie to make any sense whatsoever. And this is my problem, really. I wanted to ask you, Linus, you're a big Star Wars guy. I was a big Star Wars guy. Does this occupy like the same kind of cultural space in your mind as Star Wars, Indiana Jones?
Nothing's as culturally big as Star Wars.
I think that's the consensus. Indiana Jones is big, but not nearly as big
right.
as Star Wars.
But maybe Indiana Jones. I'm trying to think about it, and like I feel like Indiana Jones might serve as a good analog of like the way I feel about it is the way that somebody else might feel about Star Wars.
Are there people that into it?
No. I don't think there's anyone who's like hardcore Indiana Jones fan the same way that people are hardcore Star Wars fans. But Indiana Jones, like, arguably, huh?
It doesn't help that Kingdom of the Crystal Skull was such a gross attempt to resurrect it. Like, if that had been successful, they could have brought the franchise back.
True, they are. They're filming another one.
Are they really?
Indy 5 is in the works, baby. But I think that the world doesn't, the canon just isn't wide enough. They don't have enough in that. There's not enough world to explore. There's no different ships and planets. It's just...
This is the funny thing about the franchise is that it was based on serials of the 1930s, which were like TV shows and radio programs and stuff where like they went on forever. Like they were episodic and they just had like a million different things, a million different Nazi bases, a million different, you know, cowboy versus Indian stories. Like there's so many places you can go. They're all very similar in the end. You know, it's a swashbuckling adventure, one guy versus the bad guys. But like, you know, there's that's the funny thing about this movie. It feels like an entry into a series. Like this feels like it feels like just one of many Indiana Jones stories. Like we go to Egypt. He's like got an old friend there that he's had other adventures with already.
Yeah, and like, they're good at that.
Yeah, and you know it starts right in the middle of him on one of his adventures.
And I love when the romantic setup in the movie. Isn't starting new. I love when they have a past.
Right.
I love when they have history.
Right.
Well, last time you really screwed me over. That kind of thing is awesome.
Yeah.
Although it was kind of weird. Like we're introduced to Marion where she's like 20 shots deep and drinking this giant man under the table. And then she proceeds to have a completely cogent conversation like and isn't drunk at all.
Well, I think that's kind of one of her character attributes is that she's like freaking, she's not a lightweight. That's for sure.
Yeah, and she uses that later, which kind of, it actually kind of assuages some of my problem I had with that. I was like, okay, I guess this is her thing, her attribute. She just doesn't get drunk. Okay.
I want to talk about her because I'm gonna go into the woke side again here.
She's weak as fuck compared to Leia.
Yeah. Like, Leia can actually, like there's parts where she, like, shoots a gun and stuff and is, like, you know, participating in commanding people and whatnot, but like Marion, we meet her and she has such a strong entrance.
She owns her own bar.
Yeah, she's this independent woman. She holds her own amongst all these like kind of sketchy guy
she
characters.
She lives in the wilderness.
Yeah, and then like later, she's just like a damsel.
Yeah, she's just annoying and yelling. And
in that whole chase sequence in Cairo, she's just like running away. Indy is like literally throwing her out of the way so he can protect her from the bad guys.
Pretty cool when she hopped in that basket, though.
That was smart.
Move. That was a good move.
If only that freaking monkey wasn't there.
Not spending enough time with me the other night, and she said something to the effect of, "Well, I watched your bad movie with you," and I kind of said, "Did you really watch the movie?" And I challenged her to give a plot synopsis, and here's what she came up with: he's trying to find the Ark. He rescued the girl who he had a thing with in the past, and there was like a complicated history there, but she's going to help him. And then she got kind of captured by the guy who was also looking for the thing he needed. So then he rescued her. And like, it turns out he still has some feelings for her, I guess. Then she got captured, but he didn't rescue her because he wanted to get the Ark instead. And then she tried to get away with a drinking contest with the other guy who kind of likes her, but the guy who captured her before showed up. then she gets put in
the bored. I am so goddamn bored.
Hold on. And they get out by pushing over a stupid wall and pushing out a brick where there's daylight. That was stupid.
That wall was dumb, man.
And that's when I left. And I went, okay, I noticed her entire plot summary focused on Marion. And I asked her if that was intentional. She's just like, no, I'm just like more interested in the relationship aspect of a movie. And it wasn't good in this movie. And I was like, wow, that's really interesting. And then she's like, yeah, like I noticed other stuff. Like he's a teacher. And when they push him in the snake pit, the snake just like sits there and doesn't bite him. That for some reason, that was dumb. But yeah, that aspect of the movie was not good. And so it made me think like maybe I only love it so much because this movie is
you're a dumb male
just boyish fantasy fulfillment. And I happen to watch it as a boy. I mean, who doesn't want to grow up and be like a steadily, you know, treasure hunter? I mean, if I watched it for the first time as an adult, I probably wouldn't so much. But I think when you watch a film, you have to also consider who it's for. No, maybe it isn't for mid 30 somethings. And maybe that's fine.
Yeah, agreed. That's really interesting, though. I mean, it speaks to that whole like comic books or games or movies just being by men for men and her not seeing herself in that movie and just not even being interested in it. Hopefully that's changing. One thing that's interesting, though, is I read an article. You guys remember crack.com?
Yeah.
Way before the internet really popped off and everything was a listicle. They used to make listicles and like top six things. And they were really interesting. And one of the articles was like six things that a movie has to be to be a blockbuster. And it was things like it needs to be merchandisable. You need to be able to buy toys all around the world for it. And one of the things is it needs a romance element to it. And I was like, why? That's so stupid. And
romance is dumb.
It basically just said like, there's going to be people watching the movie who just need to see that. Like when you bring your girlfriend to Transformers, even though it's a dude movie made for dudes, there has to be some love interest in it so that at least your girlfriend's interested in this part of it. That's what it said.
Wait, so you're saying, this was saying that like there's only the element of like guy beats bad guy, guy gets girl because the girl is paying attention to that? They're like, oh yeah, she
throw her a bone. It's made for men, but if she's going to be there, give her something.
See, I think that it's important to have these kind of stories that, you know, boys and people can like enjoy and like kind of look up to, like with like role models where they're like, oh, this is a manly person that, you know, I want to be that guy. But at the same time, I feel like this movie kind of lacks Indiana Jones as a character kind of lacks the sort of aspirational element of that, in that he doesn't really have much of an arc in this movie. And I couldn't really
no arc whatsoever.
Exactly.
He starts out as like kind of an ass who's like sort of out for himself, but also, you know, kind of uses, I'm preserving history as a bit of a shield.
Yeah.
And he ends as sort of an ass who's out for himself and uses preserving archaeological history as a shield.
And he actually makes the same critical error twice in the movie, which is at the beginning, he steals the idol and against his better judgment, he passes it to his assistant who's already swung across this gap.
Yeah.
And that guy runs off with it. And he's like, damn it, he let the treasure out. He let the treasure get out of the out of the tomb before him. And then later on, he does the same thing.
With the ark?
With
he
the ark. Like,
sends it up?
He sends it up, and then they close the door, and he's, damn it, I let the treasure out before me again.
Whoopsies. I guess there's nothing to learn from this situation, though. That's Indy. That's how he talks. Indiana Jones!
That's just who he is. I mean, sometimes he's thinking, you know, two steps ahead, like when he leaves Marion gagged and bound so that he can go get the Ark, because if she's rescued, they're going to realize that he's there in the encampment.
That part was awesome.
But then other times, once he's like got the treasure, it's just like, okay, woo, home free, except, oh no, oh, oops, I'm not. Actually, my ship can get hijacked, or this tomb can get closed on me, or the temple that's falling around me, the rope swing can be left on the other side. I think it's great. I love that he's flawed.
What do you mean?
I love that he's completely flawed and actually kind of incompetent sometimes, because I think it makes him a way, way better protagonist for an action film.
The question is whether or not it's intentional. Is it intentional, though? Is he intentionally flawed, or is it a hole? Like, for example, here at the very beginning, there's a spot where like a buddy pulls a gun on him and he uses his whip. I think it's the first time we get to see the whip, and he whips that gun out of the guy's hand and it lands on some rocks, and then he turns his back on the gun and continues doing what he was doing. It's like, doesn't pick up the gun. It's not a threat to him.
Doesn't think that like the other guy could be in on it. I guess that was supposed to be like his assistant.
So are they intentionally being like, he's a badass, he doesn't care about that gun, that guy's so scared he ran away? Or is it just like they forgot to tie that up?
I'll go with Linus here a bit and say that I do appreciate the fact that they set him up as kind of a badass and then repeatedly show you instances where he's a fool and weak and he fails. To be like,
yeah, I mean,
he's not perfect and, you know, people aren't perfect, but like, look how cool he is still. You can still be cool. And this is what I'm trying to, this is what I'm struggling to with this movie. Like, what should I take away? What do we take away? What do boys take away? Oh, it's cool to have a whip and fight Nazis? What do you mean? What do you mean, who cares?
It doesn't matter.
It does matter.
It's just a stupid, dumb, turn your brain off movie.
Do you think Star Wars is dumb?
Look. It's just an adventure where things can actually go wrong. That's what I like about it. Compared to a modern film where they prepare to storm the enemy base or whatever.
I'm not even talking about these things.
Okay, there's like the Matrix room where they've got like all these rifles and grenades and, you know, your 007 secret, you know, pen that you click and it makes someone's brain explode or whatever. He has none of that
stuff. We're talking about different things here, Linus. You're talking about like the practical reasons in the movie.
You're talking about something irrelevant. It doesn't matter.
No, it does matter. You're saying this is a dumb, shut your brain off movie, enjoy it. But I'm saying that if it appeals to kids in that way, there should be some sort of takeaway. What do kids learn from this?
The moral of the story.
The objective here is not to have kids learn that whips are cool.
Yeah, sure.
No!
Like, Indy does a bunch of stuff, and then at the end, he doesn't even get the treasure.
What do you like about...
The moral of the story is, it doesn't matter, you know, what happens. Sometimes you're just not going to win. And maybe you should have been nicer.
What do you mean? He totally wins in the end.
No, he doesn't.
They get the Ark of the Covenant. He gets the girl.
No, they don't.
What do you mean?
The Ark goes into that big warehouse at the end, right?
All he wanted is for it to go to a museum. He accomplished his mission.
No, it didn't. He didn't. It doesn't go to the museum.
Okay, it goes to a
CIA.
Yeah, it goes to somewhere safe.
What? No, you're contradicting yourself. It did not go to a museum.
It goes somewhere.
The museum. They have that meeting at the end, and he comes out all mad talking to Marion before they go on a date or whatever. And he's like, this sucked. And the shot was totally out of focus because they couldn't review footage in real time back then.
Okay, he didn't.
I guess they had to use it anyway.
He didn't win in the way that he wanted to, but I don't think you could characterize that as a failure at all.
Yeah, it's a part. Well, that's. Okay, the climax is him actually getting the arc, and then the resolution is him not getting it the way he wanted.
Losing it again.
He didn't lose it. What? He doesn't want to hold it in his house. He just wanted to bring it back.
No, but he wants it to be in a museum so other people can enjoy it and study it, and it's a piece of history. And he doesn't get that. It gets lost again.
I guess so.
He
does not fail.
He does fail.
No.
His whole goal, when he packs the pistol,
it's a happy ending, dude.
It's a happy ending, but not for him.
He accomplishes the mission for their mission, but he doesn't accomplish his personal mission.
Okay, well, maybe I'm, you know, didn't take away from his motivations like the same thing that you are, but like, I did not think that the ultimate goal of his whole thing was to have it be set up in a museum so people could come and see it and like learn from it. That's literally said in the film.
That's verbatim the goal.
It belongs in a museum!
Guys, that's the goal, and then they double-cross them. And they hide it away. That's what happened.
Wow, I really did not think that was such an important part of the movie.
But that is the goal. Like, it's not whether it's not an important part of the movie. It's just a dumb action flick. Like, that's just a plot device. But that we can't criticize it for saying, well, Indy's a jackass, and then he wins in the end. Because he doesn't, actually. All he does is stop the bad guys because he happens to be motivated to do something for himself and his own personal glory, but then he doesn't even succeed at that.
I guess, but
he didn't care. That wasn't what he was after.
I'll take your point that maybe the takeaway from this movie, because I'm not trying to say that it's completely pointless, but I'll take your point that the takeaway of this movie is to show, you know, a strong character who can fail and that it's okay to fail. You just try your best or whatever. I don't know. Maybe that's the takeaway.
That failure is outside of the character, though. He didn't.
Sure.
That's outside of his control. Point.
That's a good point. Makes it a little less compelling. But for me, the reason I was comparing it to Star Wars, because Star Wars has this like really strong character arc of like Luke starting as this, you know, no one farm boy who like by the end of the movie, he's making huge change in the galaxy and blowing up a super weapon. And he's learned a lot along the way. So I feel like that to me is like such an interesting and worthwhile thing for kids to watch, even as a fun adventure movie, because the takeaway is that like, hey, you know, have dreams. Go out there, go on an adventure, accomplish something. And this one is like, Indiana Jones is already a really cool guy, but he has some flaws. And that's the end.
Yeah, he gets it done. I have another weird question. Do you guys think that, like this movie takes place in 1936. It's post-World War I, pre-World War II. So I guess Nazis exist, but there's no Holocaust yet. But for the audience, there has been a Holocaust, and Nazis are evil.
Right.
And they are the most evil ever. Do you think that they were like it seemed like they relied on our cultural knowledge of how evil Nazis are in this movie more so than the characters in the movie would have known?
You know a little bit, but I also absolutely love the Nazis as villains. I actually have a point about this specifically. Nazis are fantastic villains because they were so genuinely awful that no matter what you say about them, I believe that they were that big of assholes. And the fact that they were real puts these events firmly in reality in a way that, like, you know, space wizards and, you know, Lord Voldemort and, you know, Thanos are not.
Right.
Like, that's just, it's far less engaging for me. That's really, I mean, that's where my synopsis came from. That's what I love, is that this movie is grounded in reality. This is a hero whose idea of, you know, packing heat is putting a revolver in his suitcase, compared to that scene in the white room in The Matrix, you know, where they're just like grabbing as many guns as they can fit in all of their duffel bags.
Right.
Like that's who is undertaking this adventure. And then the people he's up against are just these very real, like very awful, but very real people utilizing the same kinds of mechanisms that could screw over, you know, someone who's just trying to, you know, grab a museum artifact in the real world. Like having more resources or having powerful friends who are bad dudes but like have a lot of money or whatever the case may be. Like everything is, if you take aside the sort of comic book fight scenes and the silly humor and all that kind of stuff, if you take that out of it, it's like kind of a believable plot. Like these guys are trying to get this artifact, but then the Nazis throw a bunch of money and hire all the right experts who just have no morals whatsoever and are willing to give this powerful, you know, artifact to the Nazis, and they like screw them over and get it first.
Well,
it's like, yeah, that seems like totally believable. But then you've got this like mystic element to it where the Ark genuinely has these powers. I think that's freaking awesome.
Well, how believable is it when it's like the whole thing is we need to stop these evil Nazis from getting it because then they'll have a powerful weapon that they can lead their armies with. But in 1936, like, I don't know much history, especially compared to Americans who really learn a lot about World War II. In 1936, were people worried that the Nazis would get kick-ass weapons?
The Nazis came to power in 1933.
So, yeah, but
that's when they kind of, like,
yes,
took over the government.
There was concern. There was concern in the global community about the Nazis because Germany was not supposed to be building an army.
Right, because that was...
Right, after World War I.
They weren't allowed to, right? When,
yeah.
Okay, when does... is it 39 that the war pops off? 39
yes.
to 45?
That's when it friggin' pops off.
So that's like 3 years before that happens. They're already like, if the Nazis get this, we're screwed. It seems kind of, really?
Well, I don't know if they're
Of course. There were genuine concerns about Adolf Hitler in the world at that time. I don't think that's a plot hole at all.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wars, you know, things lead up to wars. It's not like people just start shooting for no reason.
We're talking about Hitler here.
Hitler might have started shooting for no reason. I think that the Nazis are like a perfect antagonist for this kind of story. Well, I don't know if they are a perfect antagonist, but like they serve as a really good perfect antagonist in this movie because they're just kind of like these hordes of uniformed guys. Like, we don't really delve into the Nazi ideology or like why, like they want this to like take over the world, but you could substitute the Nazis for just like bad guy with henchmen.
Except you can't because the audience, they are assuming that the audience is going to know how bad the Nazis are and that they're going to take over the world. That saves them a lot of they don't have to write that in because we already know that. So it actually saves them some work.
No, for sure.
And like when you write a villain whose sole motivation is to like destroy everything and take over the world, you know, I think guys like us would sit around on a podcast analyzing it going, well, why do they want to do that? You know, whether it's Sephiroth or whoever, you kind of go, well, that's stupid. Why does anyone just want to blow up the world? Whereas with the Nazis, like James said, you don't have to explain that. They just actually just did want to like kill everyone.
They did us a real solid for all narrative of the future, hey?
Yeah.
Just get to use them again and again. Thank you, Nazis.
Well, except in the new one, it's the Soviets. In the Crystal Skull, it's the Soviets now instead of the Nazis.
And that's why the movie's not as good.
Linus, why are you such an apologist for like dumb entertainment?
Because I try to watch a movie as what it's supposed to be. So when I watch a kid's movie with my kids, I try to see the things in there that are good for kids. When my kids laugh at a little slapstick moment, I go, oh, well, apparently that was a really good thing to put in this movie, even though I didn't personally enjoy it. In the case of this movie, it is one that I did personally enjoy as young me. As an adult, I go back and I look at all the bad ADR.
Bad ADR.
Yeah, that's dialogue replacement. I look at even the dialogue they didn't replace that's really sloppy when they're having that conversation in the gigantic hall near the beginning of the movie. There's like these really jarring shifts between really echoey audio where clearly they had to have the boom mic 10 feet above their heads in this gigantic auditorium, and then clearer audio where they're doing a tight shot and they were able to get it closer. Like there's a lot of really technical problems with the movie, absolutely. But it's just so full of moments. It's like when I went back and rewatched Austin Powers a little while ago. It's like, yeah, it's far from a perfect film. But, you know, every couple of minutes, whether it's that mirror flip where Marion is looking at herself in the mirror and she's like, oh, this is a crappy mirror. And she wipes it and flips it up and uppercuts Indy. It's fantastic.
That was just I feel like there were a lot of those moments were just kind of confusing to me. Like that moment.
How is that confusing? It's just funny.
Well,
he's already gotten the crap kicked out of him. He's like feeling awful. And he's just like sitting there. It's just the kind of thing that could happen. You're just cabin mates with someone. You go and flip something around. You accidentally whack him. You're like, oh, sorry about that.
I think this is my problem is that, okay, I saw this movie a bunch of times as a kid, but like I wasn't really ever into it. Like I didn't really ever love Indiana Jones. And I kind of the same way, like we talked about this in the Bond podcast as well. Like I've seen some of the old Bonds, but like it never really spoke to me, you know?
Well, I mean, when you look at a giant snake pit like that and you're just thinking, what the hell are all those snakes eating? Are there that many
mice
down there?
My only thought there was like,
come on.
Yeah, are the snakes just surviving by like eating each other?
I'm joking. That doesn't matter. It's so cool. That there's a bunch of snakes in a pit just makes it cool. I like it. Whatever.
No, see, like I see that and I'm just like, yeah, right.
Exactly. Or you know what I said, yeah, right to is when he rocks that big Anubis statue over and it breaks through the wall. I'm like, yes. If it has enough mass to break through the stone wall, then you can't rock it.
Exactly.
Even as a kid, it did bother me how they get out of the snake pit because I'm looking at it going, they literally climb out of a building that was visible from above ground. Like,
yeah.
How did nobody find this chamber?
Hey, we wonder where this goes. Yeah.
That's a problem.
You talked about the Nazis and other elements kind of grounding the story in reality. And maybe I think that's my problem with it is that, if you want to have a turn your brain off, swashbuckling action movie, I need there to. I feel like it helps me a lot to have it be set in a fantastical realm, like Star Wars. But I'm not thinking. I'm not like as if that spaceship could make that turn. Like I'm not thinking about that because it's a spaceship. You can just make up the rules if you want, right? As you go. But with this, it's like, okay, we got a pit. We got an underground pit that's been there for millennia. And somehow there's still a bunch of alive snakes in there. Like, what? Like, that doesn't make any sense. So then because it's grounded in reality, I have to, like, compare it to what I know about reality. So if there, you know.
I hear what you're saying. It's better if it just doesn't go there.
But then you're watching as an adult.
Right. And as a kid, you're just kind of, like, not thinking about it.
You know what disappointed me?
Right. Well, oh, wait. But that was my point about this, is that watching these kind of movies as an adult depends on whether I have nostalgia for them. So I'll like watch Star Wars, and I friggin' love Star Wars as a kid.
It's hard to step outside
of
that.
And I can turn my brain off a little bit. Well, I mean, even then it's hard because I know a ton about the lore and stuff. But with something like this, I don't really have a ton of nostalgia for it. Sonic, I didn't have a ton of nostalgia for it. Same with Bond. And I'm just like, can you be smarter?
I was mad that I finally got to see this scene that I've seen reproduced so many times where the dude is running from a boulder, running at the camera for the boulder behind him. I played Crash Bandicoot. I'm like, finally, I get to see the movie where this happens.
You're like, this is what that's from.
It was like 8 seconds long. I was like, aw.
Yeah, it's so quick. Yeah. But it's iconic.
Is it from something else, though? Is that from one of the serials? Do you know?
Well, who knows? I don't know.
Were they the first to do that?
I haven't seen the serials.
I don't know. Seems like a pretty technically hard thing to do to shoot that.
Yeah, I doubt that they...
Can I just jump in with a part that I really loved?
I don't think so.
Please.
So I thought the really iconic scene that's been duplicated so many times that you were going to mention is the one where he whips out the gun and shoots the guy who's waving the sword around. I was sure you were going
to... Oh, yeah, that part's sweet.
Okay. Can I just say how much I... You know the story behind how they filmed it that way, right?
Right.
He was tired.
Harrison Ford had like dysentery or something. He was feeling awful that day.
Yeah.
And there was supposed to be a whole fight with the guy.
He improvised
and it. It was... Yeah, and he just like...
He didn't feel like doing
improvised,
it.
But he just like... They rewrote the scene so that they could get it shot that day. And anyway, there was a part of that scene that I loved that's literally in the background of it that most people probably wouldn't even notice, but just I was watching it a little bit analytically and as an adult instead of as a kid.
Oh.
When the fight's over, the people who are watching the fight, like, that's just so realistic. Like, everyone gets around. They might as well have been shouting, fight, 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 fight. And instead of caring who won, they just charge in, strip whatever of value could possibly be on the corpses, and then run off with it. I thought that was fantastic because you just get this, like, sense of A, irreverence, and B, the movie not taking itself too seriously, and C, it not being that unrealistic. Like, yes, they probably wouldn't have had big smiles on their faces and hoisted over their heads and been like, hey, I got his sword, LOL, but that's what they're thinking.
There was so
and
many...
So I...
Oh, go,
yeah,
ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just saying, there's so many parts like that where I'm just kind of like, yo, Harrison, Indiana Jones would be like arrested or mauled by this point. Like, he goes around and like tips over everyone's baskets looking for the they took Marion away in the basket, and he's like tipping over everyone's basket. He's just causing a huge ruckus. Yeah, but like, okay. What? All these people just have no agency. They're just like, we're the locals. Aha, we're funny.
Look, he's the good guy, but he's also a total ass. Like, I love how he throws a pocket full of change at the beggars to get rid of them, gags Marion back up because it's going to spoil his plan if he rescues her too soon. Like,
that part's actually awesome.
I don't have a problem with him doing that. I have a problem with the fact that he can do that with impunity.
Well, okay. Think about it. If you ran around somewhere and like just tipped over people's baskets and you're actually running fast, most of them are probably going to be focused on picking up their basket and they're going to have a hard time chasing you
down. He wasn't running
fast. Dude, I don't
know.
There's a lot of cultures where they gang beat people
exactly.
For stuff like that. He's an outsider. He probably just would have got gang beat.
This is like the side streets of Egypt.
Speaking of background stuff, there's a part where Indy's kicking a bunch of ass and in the background, Marion's like picking up frying pans and other things from the bazaar and like hitting people. And I, for some reason, she drew my eye and I only watched her in that scene.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh man, some pathetic hits.
I know.
She was just like,
boom,
just tapping on people when they're falling over.
Man, I feel like I would have given this movie a whole nother point if she had some moments of badassery also.
She started strong. It seemed like
she started strong and then he just like threw her out of the way.
I like when he left her tied up though.
The dress scene, that just rubbed me the wrong way, man.
Hold on. Let's do that, but the fact that he left her tied up was great because it's in the midpoint of the movie, and the midpoint of a screenplay is the part of the movie where you have to make the characters go all in, no turning back. The stakes get raised at the midpoint, and that's right. What happened there. He's like, well, you're just going to be in their custody, and then he takes off. That was awesome.
Yeah.
You're like, shit, now the stakes are real because like she could just die.
Right.
He has to save her.
He came to save her, and we thought it was all going to be fine, but not yet.
Not today.
She's got to put on this weird dress and like please Belloc in a sexual way before that happens. She has to be used.
They're trying to set him up as a gross dude. Like, I don't think that that's on her.
She uses the dynamics.
I thought it was such an old tactic. I feel like if a movie today used that, there would be outcry.
The movie's from 30 years
no,
ago.
No, no, no. I know. I know, but that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not saying that the movie is bad because of these things. I'm just saying that it shows its age with these things.
Of course it shows its age. Yeah. It is old.
I liked when she had that frilly dress on, and then they made up some reason for the bottom frills to get ripped off, so she was more mobile in the following scenes.
Yeah, classic. I wanted to talk a bit about like how this was George Lucas's other thing, and he doesn't have anything else, and that was kind of like...
Wait, this is a George Lucas thing?
Well...
Yeah. George Lucas, Steven Spielberg.
Well, George Lucas... So...
Oh, yeah! South Park! Yeah, George Lucas.
Yeah. What? I learned this from South Park.
I remember the South Park episode after the Crystal Skull came out, and George Lucas is in there.
George Lucas wrote the story. Like, he came up with the character, basically, and he talked to Steven Spielberg about it, and they, like, worked on it together. And then the screenplay was actually written by Lawrence Kasdan, who wrote the screenplay for Empire Strikes Back.
Which came out right before this. What's weird is that Lucas is such a hero's journey guy, and this movie doesn't really have that.
Well, and this is why, because, like, Star Wars was hero's journey, but this one, I think this is, you know, we talked about this. This is kind of my problem with it, that it's not really hero's journey. It's just kind of like... Indiana Jones is this sort of unchanging character who is sort of like a aspirational point for boys to look up to, in the same way that like James Bond embodies all of these sort of like manly characteristics.
You're overthinking it.
No, I'm not. This is psychology, dude. I have a degree. Did you know that, Linus?
Oh my God. I have the fun degree, psychology.
The reason that they went with they came up with this character is because George Lucas wanted to do like a Bond. Actually, Steven Spielberg wanted to do a Bond movie, and George Lucas came to him and said, "Hey, don't do a Bond movie. I have a character that's better than Bond. We're gonna make him like an American-based kind of like swashbuckling crazy guy. He's got a whip, and he's flawed.
You're gonna see Han Solo in a suit, baby, three-piece suit,
and he's a professor. So like that's kind of where this came from. It's like George Lucas isn't a hero's journey guy. He's like a fun adventure entertainment guy.
You mean Indiana Jones isn't?
Well, I mean, George Lucas did Star Wars and Indiana Jones. They're both just kind of these fun adventure franchises.
Well, same with Bond. He doesn't ever have an arc either. He just does stuff.
Which is my problem with Bond. Look, I have high expectations of my entertainment, Linus. All right, I'm sorry.
Has there ever been anyone else named Indiana?
Who's your action hero that has a satisfying arc? Give me one.
Luke Skywalker.
Okay, give me another one.
Bruce Wayne.
And besides, Luke Skywalker's arc sucks now. That's all those new movies. Those are canon.
Okay, no, I don't count the new movies.
You have to. They're canon.
No, I don't. I don't have to.
Head canon.
Okay, give me another one then.
I can't think of one off the top of my head. But
okay, well then maybe you're just holding it up to an unrealistic standard.
Oh, I totally am.
What?
Well, what's the point of that?
The standard that heroes have arcs and there's a moral of the story?
Yeah, that's not a crazy unrealistic. But like, I'm saying that the number of movies that accomplish that in a satisfying way to me are very few. But I hold it up against that standard because I want every movie to be there. And if it's not, then I'm like, well, try again. I mean, it's good. It has value. I'm not saying it doesn't have value. But I'm saying that the value is not nearly what it could be.
That's like saying a Linus Tech Tips video doesn't have enough character development. Because you that's only have true. So much screen time. I mean,
that's a different beast.
What are you talking about? It's like 2 hours long.
In an action movie, if you don't have a bunch of great, you know, chases, the people who go to those movies, because you got to remember, the movie is made for the people who watch them, not the people who don't watch them. So if you don't have enough chase scenes and you spend a bunch of time on this like character arc, you lose out on screen time.
No, it doesn't take a lot of time.
So my argument...
Hey, there's a character arc in Inception.
My argument...
There's lots
of action. Great action movie.
Wait, my argument isn't that they should take out all the dumb action bits. Have the dumb action bits, and then have a moral of the story in an arc that there's some sort of takeaway. Like, I don't want to have this static character who's just like, okay, we're going to make three movies with him, and he doesn't learn anything.
Oh, does he in the other movies? I haven't seen them.
He's set out to make three movies.
Does he have...
He wasn't even called... Indiana Jones and the whatever, like it was just supposed to be a movie.
In the other movies, Linus, does he have more of an arc? In any of them?
Last Crusade he does.
I mean, there's the redemption sort of story with his dad, yeah. In the last one.
We should have watched The Last Crusade.
Indiana Jones.
That's a great one. He learns to let go.
Maybe we'll get to it someday.
It's all right. Sean Connery?
I think most people say the third one's the best.
Riding shotgun in the little motorcycle bit?
I think it all comes down to which one you watched first, just because these are such sort of boyish adventure movies. I mean, I still have a special place in my heart for Temple of Doom. That's the one I saw first.
But the consensus is that's the worst one, right? I think most people...
Yeah, maybe. I think I might have seen Last Crusade first. And maybe that set my expectations high, you know? Indiana Jones, who needs him?
So are you excited for the new one? Apparently it does have Harrison Ford reprising the role, and as far as the Wikipedia page is concerned, it's not supposed to close out the franchise either.
Is his role going to be like as the background, like is he staying in the command center and like sending out orders to his, because like he's old now, man. Harrison Ford?
What happened in the Crystal Skull one? Did Shia LaBeouf, was Shia LaBeouf the main character?
Yeah, Shia LaBeouf was like supposed, it seemed like there was supposed to be kind of like a Mask of Zorro type of. A
torch passing?
Handing a torch.
Right.
But I mean, nothing personal. I can't stand anything with Shia LaBeouf in it. So I was automatically disappointed as soon as I found out he was cast. I went and saw it anyway, but it sucked.
You don't like Shia LaBeouf?
Why would I?
Linus. We got some problems. We got to work this out outside the podcast, man.
Don't look at me, man. I don't have any special love for Shia LaBeouf.
You don't?
I mean, the artistic stuff he does is kind of funny.
Well, I don't love him, but I think he's great.
Like, you want to see him in Transformers and stuff? Like,
Transformers, whatever.
Like, when did he win your heart?
If you want to talk about dumb action movies, you're going to talk about Transformers.
Like, even Stevens. Even Stevens, sure.
Shia LaBeouf is a great actor.
Yeah, okay.
Right, but it doesn't matter.
Like when? Like when?
I watched him in Even Stevens, and then when he started transitioning into these more like, you know, adventure movies, and then the more serious stuff that he's done recently, I think he's like, he's an artist.
I think agree that he's an artist.
He's crazy, but he's an artist.
Yeah, that's fine.
Right, but I watch movies. I don't watch actors.
Like when was he a leading man where you were like, he's
me
great.
Too. I'm just saying that I don't understand the lack of love for Shia LaBeouf. My problem with that movie.
I'm trying to say, where does it come from? What's to lack? Like, I watch movies. I don't watch actors.
Well, I already explained.
Great movie that's supposed to entertain me has he been in?
Riley's love might come from Even Stevens, like Family Network earlier series.
Could be. Holes is good. You want me to look up his.
No, I don't. I want our audience to do that. I think if you're out there listening to this and you think, man, James and Linus are stupid, Shia LaBeouf is awesome in this movie that came out within the last 6 years that they obviously never watched.
Prove us wrong.
Please tell me what that movie is and we will check it out.
I've just never encountered somebody who's like, I don't like Shia LaBeouf.
I haven't heard someone who loves Shia LaBeouf. It's just such a, it's like he's a nerd. Nice. Like he's a five.
Did you say Disturbia?
Oh yeah, that was a good movie. Like, it was okay.
I didn't watch Disturbia.
Lawless?
I've heard the Rihanna song.
Did you see Lawless with Tom Hardy and those guys?
No, never.
He's excellent in that. Fury?
You have to look these up. They're clearly not that memorable.
Well, I don't have a very good memory, but I know that I've seen these movies and I love them. He's really good in Fury. He's really good in Lawless. And then the most recent one where he's made like American Honey, Honey Boy. Those have gotten good reviews. I haven't seen him. But anyways,
Fury was
takeaway, Linus, reconsider your hate for Shia LaBeouf. Stop hating, you know? Just be.
It was bad in Fury, and Fury was not an entertaining movie.
You're wrong. But we could talk about that later.
All right, I think we beat this horse to death. Thanks for watching, guys. If you like this podcast, then you should follow it. Don't just tune in every week. You should subscribe and follow it because it really helps us on the podcast apps. And if you're watching this on YouTube, we love you. Subscribe. You can always hit us up on Twitter with your questions and suggestions for stuff we should hit up in the future, and personal questions too. We want to do a mailbag episode one day. Ask us some stuff. At Carpool Critics on Twitter and carpoolcriticspodcast@gmail.com.
You took my love you. That's my thing.
Oh.
I'm upset.
How do you feel about them now?
Now I don't know.
Bye-bye.